As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide makes simplicity a priority so financial professionals can help their clients achieve their retirement goals. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Welcome to the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. I'm Tom Keen, along with Jonathan Farrell and Lisa Abramowitz. Daily, we bring you insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. Find Bloomberg Surveillance on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, and of course, on the Bloomberg Terminal. He is extraordinary. Many would say that Edward Hyman invented market economics, with honor and grace to Alan Greenspan as well. Evercore ISI chairman, and we're thrilled that Ed Hyman could brief us here into August, into Q3, and into Q4 of this tumultuous 2021. Ed, I want to cut to the chase. You've seen this out of your engineering at MIT, an era of pricing power. It can't happen. Another era of pricing power. It can't happen. And this time around, you say there is pricing power and corporations can adapt to the new inflation. How do they do it?
So when we survey retailers in particular, they tell us that pricing power is the most ever. We also survey manufacturing companies. They say the same thing. And so costs are up, but independent of that, labor costs are up also. But independent of that, companies are able to pass it along. Because the economy is good, people are getting pay increases. But that also is important because it allows earnings to go up. And earnings are, in the second quarter, they were explosive, but I guess more important, they'll be strong in the third quarter as well.
What do you see for Q4? I mean, the idea here of inventing market economics into market analysis, many would say you did that chart paragraph, chart paragraph. What do the charts say now about the fourth quarter?
So in terms of economic growth, we have it slowing down to about 6% from roughly 10% in the second and third quarters. Because I'm really focused on the stock market, I think earnings will increase again. We have earnings in the second quarter at 220, which is probably $20 ahead of the consensus, and then maybe 230 and maybe 240 in the third and fourth quarters. And that puts the PE, something like 19 times with bond yields, below 2%. And the Fed balance sheet increasing $120 billion every single month.
Ed, you mentioned higher prices. You alluded to what you thought, but I just want to get you to emphasize it just a little bit more. Higher prices laying the foundation for higher prices, that virtuous cycle that seems to be taking place at the moment. Is that a virtuous cycle you think overwhelms the Federal Reserve? Or is this the right kind of price growth?
I think inflation is going to be more than expected. We do a lot of work on rents, and they are surging. And that's 40% of the core CPI, 20% of the core PCE. And so rents are going to be running around 6%. You can do the math on what that does. And then wages will be going up. And like we discussed a second ago, pricing power is going up. So inflation is likely to run ahead of expectations. But I think it'll settle out at around 3%. In say 2023, 2024. So it won't get out of hand, but it's be higher than it has been in the past.
Ed, how does that shape your views on what the Federal Reserve is going to do in that kind of environment? 3%, clearly below where we are right now, but that higher rate of change, if you think that's going to stick, 23, 24, I just wonder how that shapes your views on monetary policy.
Well, I hate to state the obvious with a thrill of discovery, but you know they're gonna move, and they've already indicated they're gonna move. So they'll start to taper. It'll take about a year to get down to zero, and then they'll start to raise rates. And neither of those are tightening; they're just less stimulative. And then if they keep raising rates, which will be down the road quite a bit, they'll finally get to a tightening position. So I feel, I think the Fed right now is probably behind what I see, but they're moving, and so they'll keep moving. And whether they start to taper in December or January, which is sort of the discussion at the moment, doesn't make a big difference, I think, in the big picture.
Do you see a taper tantrum, or has that already happened?
Bernanke gave us a good way to avoid it. He showed you what can happen, and so they've been very careful in trying to avoid a taper tantrum, and I think they've been largely successful. Now everybody is on the same page that they'll, discuss it in upcoming meetings. Lead story in the Journal today, and then probably by January they'll start to cut the balance sheet expansion by $10 billion. So it'll be 120, mm-hmm. 110, 100, 98, 70, 60. Then you'll get to zero in 12 months.
Yeah. Ed, the hallmark of what you invented is your granularity. Folks, we used to wait with bated breath. Ed would sleep in, and we'd be lucky if we got the report by 10 a.m., and there'd be this big, ugly black marker on it where Hyman would say, shut up and listen to this. This is C.J. Lawrence, and then on to ISI, and now Evercore ISI. How does your granularity, your study of American business, respond to business people that say they can't find workers? Do you just say to yourself, Ed, raise a damn wage? I mean, how do you respond to that?
Well, pretty much. We'll see if there's an increase in wages, increase in workers when the enhanced benefits roll off in September. But, I agree with the way you implied. And that's what I see is happening. Companies will simply raise pay. And from what I can tell, at the $15, $20 an hour wage, mm-hmm. If you do $2 or $3, you could get a significant change in the number of people applying. That seems to be enough. And so I think that you're going to see, a pretty big pop in wages. Could be transitory as well, but you'll see a pretty big pop in wages.
Right.
But it's also moving up the chain. You saw where BlackRock is giving an 8% across the board pay increase. And, for bankers, they're up to $100,000 an hour, I guess. It's not just $15 right. an hour workers.
And Hyman, should Jerome Powell continue in his services to the Federal Reserve System in America?
We'll find out. It's not a done deal, in my opinion. I'm sure, Biden is considering the options and considering whether or not he needs to work on, having a broader footprint.
I mean, John, I could see
we'll
it
see.
Now, John.
I don't think it makes a difference. If he's replaced, the person that replaces him will probably be, a little bit more dovish than he is. And I think he's done, if anything, he's too dovish, but it won't be a tightening.
I think, John, what we got to come to the conclusion is Chairman Hyman would look awfully good at the Eccles.
Oh, there we go. I don't think Ed wants to respond to that.
John, don't listen to that guy.
I'm not going to go there, Ed. Don't worry. Beyond
Excellent.
This, though, for you, for the chairman, for the FOMC, looking down to Washington at the moment, I think is so difficult for a lot of people. Just getting the direction right earlier this year was somewhat straightforward. You knew that Washington, D.C. would be a tailwind for your GDP forecasts. Everyone was revising GDP revisions higher. It was a positive growth shock. Ed, can you look down to D.C. now and characterize things for us, just on the fiscal side, the range of outcomes and how wide they are for you as you try and generate a decent outlook with some confidence?
So first, let's not leave the monetary part behind, because this is still, I think, a huge tailwind. And monetary policy leads by 1 and 2 years. But on the fiscal side, my team in Washington comes to about $2 trillion when the dust all settles. And it's not the $3.5 trillion that they're looking for, but it's not $1 trillion either. And so I think you'll get, more stimulus. Now that's over, say, a decade. So it's a couple hundred billion a year. I say a couple hundred billion.
The world's changed, Ed. The world's changed. There was a time when a couple of hundred billion was something big, and now anything under $1 trillion, you're a fiscal hawk. Chairman Ed Hyman, it's good to catch up. Of Evercore, not of the Federal Reserve. Ed, it's good to see you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Nobody ever says make it complicated. That is why Nationwide makes simplicity a priority by providing financial professionals with straightforward, client-ready resources. From clear strategies to help clients meet retirement savings and income needs, to ways to cover rising healthcare costs and more. Nationwide simplifies planning so more time can be spent helping clients. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Right now, our great honor to get some clarity on where we are in this pandemic. We do this with Peter Hotez, who's become nationally known, many media appearances, speaking in English, and also as a pinata for the anti-vaccination crew. We're thrilled that Dr. Hotez could join us. Yes, from Baylor College of Medicine, but far more, you need to know he is co-director of Parasites Without Borders with an incredible focus on the children of this world. He's Texas Children's Hospital endowed chair in tropical pediatrics. Peter Hotez, you deal 24/7 in children. What is the risk to our children of the Delta variant?
Tom, I think what's happening is it's not that this virus is selectively targeting children. I think what's happening is this is so highly transmissible. It's twice as transmissible as the previous lineage, earliest lineages that we had. So pretty much anyone who's not been vaccinated or previously infected and recovered is getting swept up in this along with kids, and particularly in areas where they haven't vaccinated. People forget that you're not getting vaccinated only to keep yourself out of the hospital, your loved ones, but also if enough people get vaccinated in the community, then it slows or halts transmission. So the kids who are not eligible to get vaccinated are protected. And that's what's happening in the Northeast. But unfortunately, it's not happening down here in the South, where the vaccination rates are just so abysmal.
Peter, how sick do children get? Is that part of it? The unvaccinated would say it's one big so what? Is it a so what?
Yeah, and so what, the misinformation to the disinformation out there is, they quote death rates and they only point to older Americans or those with profound underlying disabilities that are those who get not even disabilities, but comorbid conditions who lose their life. And the problem is we have a lot of young adults, adolescents, and even kids who are, one, getting sick, very sick, requiring hospitalization. Now we're starting to see intensive care, pediatric intensive care units for adolescents and some of the younger kids start to fill up. And we don't know the full extent of long COVID, this more long-term condition which includes neurologic injury, and we don't know how long-lasting that is. So it's all hands on deck to try to keep the kids from getting infected.
Should schools be fully reopened?
Look, I think it really depends on where the transmission is. And by the way, whether I think they should be fully opened or not doesn't really matter. That ship has sailed, and pretty much in-person classes for a lot of the country. I think the key is trying to get the adults and adolescents fully vaccinated. But, if you look in Louisiana or Mississippi, 15-16% of the adolescents are vaccinated who are eligible, maybe 30-40% of the young adults. It's ridiculous. So that, and you have some of the red state governors refusing any mask mandates, and you have the Delta variant. And, you know, I say, well, you know, what could possibly go wrong, right? I mean, I think we're asking for trouble the way we're managing this. We've got to jack up vaccination rates in the South if we're going to do well in the school year.
So let's talk about the mask mandates. I go home to the home state of California, and it's LA County that is mandating masks indoors and outdoors for vaccinated, fully vaccinated individuals. Should that be a requirement?
Yeah, I mean, certainly for indoors as Delta accelerates, and the reason, certainly for unvaccinated individuals who are at high risk, but even the vaccinated ones, and it takes a little bit of time to explain, but we think what's happening based on some preliminary studies out of China and Guangdong province, that this virus is multiplying at much higher rates in the nose and mouth, 1,000 times more. So you're shedding a lot more virus. So even if you're vaccinated and you get asymptomatic infection, in the past with previous lineages, the vaccine was really good at not only stopping symptomatic illness, but even asymptomatic transmission. What's less clear now is with this Delta variant, certainly the first parameters holding, that it keeps you from getting seriously ill or even symptomatic illness at very high rates, so that's great. But people who are vaccinated may still be shedding a fair bit of virus if they get asymptomatic infection, and that's the reason for remasking even if you're vaccinated. The CDC has not come out with that recommendation, but that's where possibly things could head.
Peter, 6 months ago, you had the courage to publish an article linking Soviet theory with American anti-science. You said anti-science kills. Elaborate on that now with 6 months more knowledge of this pandemic.
Well, we just have to look at the numbers, Tom, right? I mean, there's the reason why 600,000 or more Americans have lost their lives from COVID-19 is partly due to the SARS-2 coronavirus. But in my opinion, an equal measure was due to defiance over masks and social distancing, not defiance over vaccines. And it's all a consequence of a massive, what I call disinformation empire, which, you know, we heard a little bit about it last week and this week from the White House around Facebook. But, you know, I point out this is so much more than Facebook. This is, you know, this anti-science aggression coming out of U.S. members of Congress, out of some of the conservative cable news networks. We're seeing it now. It's been well reported now. The Russian government is trying to destabilize our democracy through what's called weaponized health communication, using anti-science as a wedge issue. And then we have the non-governmental organizations, at least a dozen of them identified by the Center for Countering Digital Hate. It's amazing. We have to have an organization called the Center for Countering Digital Hate that has some 60 million followers. So this is a well-oiled machine or empire. And I make the point is, look, you know, the U.S. government puts a lot of effort into putting in infrastructure to combat global terrorism, to combat nuclear proliferation, to combat cyber attacks. But you know what? This anti-science thing is killing more Americans than all those others combined. Mm-hmm. And we need to recognize that. And so far, the Biden administration is just kind of skirting around the edges, you know, throwing a few darts at Facebook. This won't do it.
We'll continue this conversation. Dr. Hotez, thank you so much for briefing us this morning with the Baylor College National School of Tropical Medicine, Peter Hotez.
Nobody ever says make it complicated. That is why Nationwide makes simplicity a priority by providing financial professionals with straightforward, client-ready resources. From clear strategies to help clients meet retirement savings and income needs, to ways to cover rising healthcare costs and more, Nationwide simplifies planning so more time can be spent helping clients. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Let's head to Tokyo and start the conversation by talking about the Olympics. And then, Tom, we can move on from there, OK? John Vail, Nikko Asset Management Chief Global Strategist, joins us right now. John, can you talk to me about the degree of excitement in the city you're in right now?
Well, to be honest, the mood is pretty grumpy here because of the lockdown and all the trouble that's been affiliated with the Olympics, the to and froing from various edicts that have been put out. But essentially, a good number of people are quite happy it's happening. And of course, the athletes are very happy it's happening. And thank goodness that Japan was able to have the Olympics here. I don't think anyone else really could have done it, to be honest, at this stage So it will be quite safe and secure. All the Olympics activities are happening in a bubble here, and a lot of people will be happy when it's over, to be honest here. And
I think you might be one of them, John. I've got to say, Tom, that John Vail doesn't sound thrilled about what's about to take place in his city in Japan.
Well, that is the mood here, to be honest. If you're watching on TV, it's fun, but there is a sense of skepticism about the whole thing here. It's been sort of a burden for Japan,
right?
And it's caused a lot of bad feelings.
To a nation, John Vail, where symbolism is everything, is the emperor engaged with the Olympics? Is the prime minister engaged with the Olympics?
Yes, they are. They will be at the opening ceremonies, although a lot of people have dropped out, to be honest, like former Prime Minister Abe dropped out. And I think there's only about close to 200 people from Japan who will be attending the opening ceremony. So it's very pared down. I think there's about 600 or 700 foreigners who will be at it. So very pared down.
That's amazing. John Farrell, I'm sorry. Your entourage is 200 people. That's incredible.
We couldn't go to the Olympics this year, I'm afraid, Tom. Yeah. We couldn't make it. Do you want to talk about markets, John? Should we do that right now? Let's pivot hard away from something that's clearly upsetting
nice
you,
Sugui.
Sir. This is no good, Sugui, Tom. Equity futures up 20 on the S&P. We're advancing a half of 1%. John, it just feels really difficult to push back against this market. Even with the bond market doing what it's done this week, equities were still doing okay. The drawdown was what, 2-4 percentage points on the S&P? What is the bear case now through this year?
Well, I guess you have to look at what Tom was saying earlier. There might be a surprise out of the Fed. It seems like there are some very hawkish members who might dissent at the next meeting. There's also the question about who's going to be chairman going forward, and that's much more important than when the Fed starts tapering. And of course, Powell has the job if he wants to, but if he wants it, I think. But I think there's a chance that he might say, well, I've done enough, and retire before things get any hairier. So that could cause some uncertainty, but it certainly doesn't seem like it's going to be earnings, does it? I mean, because I'm glad I'm not an analyst in the States. I mean, it's just embarrassing how much these companies are overshooting analyst estimates, isn't it?
John, the backdrop, of course, of all of this is a 10-year at a 129, and it was Nikolai Mai of PIMCO last hour saying half of it is some of the positioning and the technicals, but some of it really is fundamentals, a slowing down, concerns about the delta. What do you think?
Well, I think it is a combination of a lot of things. I think there's a lot of foreign buying, too, maybe especially from Japan. The data showed a lot of buying by Japanese banks, and I believe it was in June. And so there's certainly a lot of different factors going on, and people are really believe the Fed when they say that the CPI is going to be coming down. There's a boatload of money out there that needs some place to be, and so they like to be in treasuries almost regardless of the price, it seems. Yeah. It's certainly better than European yields and Japanese yields.
John Vail, in the Western world, you're one of the great Japan watchers. When you hear the word Japanification, the Japanification of Europe, the Japanification of the United States, is that a genuine concept for you?
I go back and forth on that, to be honest, a little bit. Japanification, certainly in terms of the economy, is not happening to the U.S. economy. I mean, the Japanese economy has been quite dull for quite some time. The U.S. economy has bounced back strongly, and inflation is back strong. You know, Japan's been suffering from deflation or noflation, as I call it, for decades now, and that's not happening in the States. So there's some aspects that certainly can happen. Certainly the debt burden that's going up in the States is a form of Japanification, and perhaps some of the attitudes about how society works is moving a little bit more in Japan's way, a little bit more of the polite version of society as opposed to the aggressive side. So there are aspects. Certainly Japan has led the way in terms of monetary policy and started QE, started negative rates, all these things. So certainly Japan has some examples to show the rest of the world, for better or for worse sometimes.
And stuck down there for a long time. John, it's going to catch up. Good luck for the following month.
Thank
John
you.
Vail there, Nikko Asset Management Chief Global Strategist.
Nobody ever says make it complicated. That is why Nationwide makes simplicity a priority, by providing financial professionals with straightforward, client-ready resources. From clear strategies to help clients meet retirement savings and income needs, to ways to cover rising healthcare costs and more. Nationwide simplifies planning so more time can be spent helping clients. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Right now, a really important conversation and an appropriate conversation for summer. Long ago and far away, Carl Bruner and Alan Meltzer set up summer conferences. I will be direct. They invented the economic summer conferences. And the detritus of that has been the Shadow Open Market Committee, of which Mickey Levy has been a member for near 40 years. He of Bank of America, now at Berenberg Capital Markets, is their chief economist. We are thrilled that Dr. Levy could join us this morning. Mickey, there has to be a fear, a singular fear, of the many shadows of our debt and our deficit, except life seems great. How is that?
It's really quite striking how the public, the financial media, and financial markets seem to be ignoring the dramatic increases in the debt and not really questioning what its consequences are, particularly, Tom. It's not just the piling up of the debt, but it's also, what are we deficit spending for? Are we allocating resources in a way that's adding to, productive capacity? And, I think let's get down to basics. One way or another, we and future generations are going to pay for it. We used to think it was all going to generate higher inflation and higher interest rates. It hasn't. That doesn't mean it's good. Once again, it gets to the point, how are you allocating national resources? And, it's going to lead to slower right. growth in the long run.
What would Carl Bruner and Alan Meltzer say about the two Americas we've been dealt, not only off the financial crisis of 2008, of which you were in the crosshairs of, but also this natural disaster we have? What would Bruner and Meltzer say would be a prescription across all of economics to get us out of this mess?
Okay, one thing they would say is coming out of the current situation, the pandemic, the economic situation is completely the opposite of coming out of the financial crisis. It was the proper role of the government to provide income support during the pandemic, but now you don't need any more fiscal stimulus. You've already rebounded back, and you need to move back to normal, both in monetary policy and fiscal policy. On fiscal policy, they would completely agree with the notion that you need to allocate more resources to infrastructure that is really needed, but not more to stimulating the economy, which is not needed.
Mickey, you want us to focus on the debt pile, so let's do that right now. Why is it a mess to you? What is messy about it?
Well, I wish our policy leaders were actually debating the issues in a rational way. All we hear about is the number, $1 trillion for the infrastructure package. Also, the infrastructure package, please note, is called the American Jobs Act. It should be called the Infrastructure Act, with an emphasis on infrastructure rather than creating jobs. There is little discussion at all about how the resources are going to be allocated, who's going to administer the projects, what projects are needed. That is, we should really be thinking strategically about how to upgrade and improve our infrastructure. Also, as you've noted, the infrastructure initiative, the American Jobs Act, is being tied politically to the American Families Plan Act, which involves a couple $1 trillion in various income support programs, and holding that hostage to more fiscal stimulus is just not constructive. And so we need to disentangle the legislation and have our policymakers address what is really needed at this time. We do not need more fiscal stimulus to create stronger economic growth. That's the old battle.
So, Mickey, your issue then is not the additional dollar of debt. It's what that additional dollar of debt is being used for. Is that a fair characterization of your position?
Oh, I think it's a combination. I mean, whenever you have the government debt to GDP rising above 100, you should be concerned. You should be also be concerned when the Secretary of the Treasury says, the Fed is keeping rates at zero, so now's the time to spend more. That's not wise strategic thinking. So I'm concerned about the rise in the debt per se, but I'm also very concerned about what we're deficit spending for, and does that quote unquote pave the road for increasing productive capacity in the long run? Because it's the continued increase in growth in the future that allows us to finance or debt, the debt service, and also raise standards of living.
Why isn't all the spending leading to inflation?
Well, it will. I mean, the risks are inflation is going to go up. So let me put it in a nutshell. Inflation has already risen significantly higher than the Fed has had earlier predicted it would. Some portion of the rise in inflation is temporary as these supply constraints and supply bottlenecks dissipate. However, you have seen an acceleration of aggregate demand. Okay, now the critical issue is after this initial spurt in economic growth as the economy reopens, following that, if all of the monetary and fiscal stimulus in the pipeline, which is unprecedented, if those policies actually stimulate stronger aggregate demand as they are supposed to, then you're going to end up with excess demand. And if those policies fail to work,
right,
then you're going to have the economy go back to where it was, and most of the inflation will prove to be right. Temporary. But, the critical point is, the risks are for inflation to rise, and there's no question but that the higher inflation hurts lower income people the most, and what the Fed is doing is it's really accentuating income and wealth inequality, and it's really not stimulating the economy.
Because of time, I want to get you in trouble with Berenberg in Germany. Tell me about the new Bundesbank. From where you sit, and after watching Lagarde yesterday and the revolution of the ECB, is this a new Bundesbank?
Compared to a decade ago, of course it is. The ECB, when it was founded, was the Bundesbank was in the driver's seat, and it held to its old precept of stable money and stable price levels, and now the ECB is it's in an awkward situation, but it's all about financial stability and continuing to ease and continuing to have its eye out on the weak links in the European Union. That means continuing with its QE and negative rates. And so, yes, and of course, under Lagarde, they've expanded the scope of the objectives of the ECB to include climate change, some credit and distributional issues. So yes, it's a different policy making body than it used to be.
Mickey, it's good to catch up. Just the flavor of the heritage of Berenberg there with Mickey Leafy and Holger Smeeding on the other side of the Atlantic. Mickey Leafy there of Berenberg.
This is the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. Thanks for listening. Join us live weekdays from 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio and on Bloomberg Television each day from 6 to 9 a.m. for insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. And subscribe to the Surveillance Podcast on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, and of course, on the Terminal. I'm Tom Keene, and this is Bloomberg.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.